This information is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with regard to the subject matter covered. It is offered with the understanding that the presenters are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If legal advice or other expert advice is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.
Excellent. Welcome to class. Tonight is advanced real-time deal analysis with my spreadsheet. Upcoming classes, pay attention to this one because Thanksgiving's coming up, so there's a bunch of stuff that's different on here. Next Tuesday, James is teaching Warning, the dangers and risks of real estate. I think James thinks this is like his best class ever. He really likes to teach it. You guys should request it all the time. Last time when we taught it in here, the room was packed, and James and I were kind of like, we don't know why. So that's the webinar on Tuesday. Don't come here.
Clarification, that is actually a recording. I got double booked, and so that will be available for everybody.
Perfect. So available for everybody. It's recording, so you can watch it at your leisure, or is it at 6 only?
It'll be all day.
Perfect. All day. You can watch it whenever you want. There is no webinar on November 21st. It's the week of Thanksgiving, so don't show up online then. And then the following week after Thanksgiving, James is teaching on the webinar, Little Down Nomad Overview. What's that going to be about?
It's basically anyone who wants to get involved in real estate investing and put minimal amount down. It's going to be the whole class on how to do minimal down real estate investing.
Perfect. That sounds awesome. And then next week, don't come here. You come here, there will be no one here except you and whoever else didn't hear me say don't come here. It's at the Harmony Library, which is Front Range Community College. James is teaching there. A bunch of credit unions asked him to teach a class, so he's teaching three classes like on a Tuesday, a Wednesday, and a Thursday. Are they all like next week?
One of them is tomorrow, and then Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. That's
gotcha.
One of the reasons why I can't teach a Tuesday webinar.
Yeah, so it's at the Harmony Library, and as James mentioned last week, it's kind of a conglomerate of topics that the credit unions asked him to teach, so it's not going to be a typical NCREG class where we go deep on one topic. He's going to cover lots of stuff. What are you covering?
It's really all over the place.
Yeah. Like depreciation and taxes and...
And, you know, how to select a property manager and how to analyze a deal.
So like one slide. It's basically that teach everything in 1 hour class.
Plus.
Yeah. Awesome. And then there is no class on Thanksgiving, so... that week as well here, so no class November 22nd. And then the week after Thanksgiving, James is teaching looking at profitable investment properties, tips and tricks. So this is what?
It is everything from requesting a showing through what to look for at the properties and how to think about properties when you're looking at them and then all that stuff. So it's pretty much like the process from showings through sort of like requesting.
Yeah, which is a great fit for the class after this class tonight because even though it's going to be like 2 weeks away, the class tonight's going to kind of teach you how to analyze properties, and then the next step is, hey, you're done analyzing, you want to go see it. That's kind of what James is going to talk about in that class. And then the week after that, from last week, everybody wanted to see buying down interest rates and how to improve your cash flow, so we're going to be teaching that one. I'll be teaching that. So we'll cover, if you have extra money or if you want to improve your cash flow on a property as you're buying it or even refinancing it, how you can do that by buying down your interest rate. The answer, if you haven't seen the class, the answer is not what you would intuitively think if you have a bunch of extra money, what you should do with it. So that is that. Tonight, like I said, is advanced real-time deal analysis. Gotta like Excel, otherwise you're in the wrong room. We're going to do introductions, so introduce yourself, and two quick questions tonight. What is the most difficult part of analyzing a deal for you? And I will hopefully make that not as hard after tonight. And then you get a choice of two deals, and so this should be a really, don't ask me, where is it at? It's just like, this is all you get. You just have to pick. Deal one, $200,000 duplex, gross rents of $1,600 a month, cash flow is $600 a month. Cash on cash percentage is 18. Deal number two, 350K duplex. Gross rents, $2,800 a month. Cash flow, $590 a month. cash on cash percentage, 8.6%. We'll start over here with you, Joe. You're on the spot. You get to set the tone for the whole class.
No, I haven't even read all the deals yet.
Oh.
I'm Joe, and what's difficult about analyzing deals? I don't know, because I have your spreadsheet, and it's amazing. So
where's my wallet?
And which deal would I do? I would have to say... Knowing you, I would say.
Oh. But maybe it's reverse psychology.
I would say deal number two.
All right. Do you want to introduce yourself? What's your name?
Parker.
Parker. Hi, Parker. What's the hardest part about analyzing a deal for you?
I don't know.
Perfect. Good answer. Keep drawing. Elijah. Oh, yeah. They're both sold. Everyone else is screwed. What are you doing? Nice. Hello.
Hello.
You're back.
Yes, I'm back. I think the most difficult part would be not just the rents, but all the estimation.
Okay. Perfect. Deal one or deal two?
Without one.
Perfect.
Dan Silva, kind of built some, we'll kind of share the brain here, but it's easy to calculate, you know, interest rates and, you know, taxes, you know, those predetermined things, but little details, you know, like, okay, when should I put an expensive water heater on that, you know, things, you know, other things that we don't foresee.
Thank you. James.
I'm James. Most difficult part of analyzing a deal is knowing what rent to use when I first do my analysis when you haven't yet seen the property.
When you haven't what?
Haven't yet seen the property. And then which deal would I do below? Yeah, that's tricky. It probably would be non-number factors that would go into that. They both seem pretty interesting.
Trying to be on the right side of history, you're hoping. Nice. Denise.
I'm Denise Malone. The numbers don't scare me on analyzing the deal. I struggle with analyzing them. I'll take deal number two because $200,000 is probably
about. Well played.
Yeah, at least you had a reason. Awesome. Sherman.
James Sherman. No, I get a little confused with the spreadsheet for what's important for input. I like just a few factors to make it real easy.
I need to take my old spreadsheet and put on the second tab and just have it be like three inputs and
there
output.
Go.
There's an idea.
One.
Nice. Hey.
I'm Alex. I think estimating repairs would be something for me because I don't have much experience at it. And I'll go with deal number one.
Perfect. Gotcha.
I'm Gretchen. And the most difficult part, I would think, would be CapEx, figuring out capital expenditures, things that you can't, you know, like when's the furnace going to go out and do you need a new roof and stuff like that, or are there cracks in the, you know, in the foundation, things like that. And I'm going to go with one because it has an 18% cash on cash. And the cash flow on it is $600, and the cash flow on the more expensive one is only $590. So I know you have an 18% cash on cash flow.
Perfect.
I'm Scott. Most difficult thing for me in analyzing a deal, well, it's kind of two things, maybe rehab costs, depending on how much is needed, and then also kind of figuring out in this market if there's a higher and better use for the property maybe to make it a deal.
Sure. Yeah, that's always outside the box thinking right there, right? Like, I can't quite make it work the way it is. Could I find a better use for the property? Yeah, that's a great one.
I'd go video one into that cash on cash.
Awesome. Brent?
I'm Brent. I haven't done a deal yet. I really haven't analyzed one, but I think all the intangible kind of things, the guesses, like this order, all that stuff is going to be difficult to nail down. Yes. I'm going to go with deal two.
Okay. Perfect. Allison.
Hi, I'm Allison. I guess I don't really know a whole lot about analyzing a property, so all of it would be very difficult for me. And I will go with the crowd and go with one.
Nice. Rob.
Hi, I'm Rob. I would say hardest part is coming up with accurate rents. And I'm going with deal number two.
Okay. Everybody's just getting crazy for no reason. Brendan.
I'm Brendan Foster, a buy and hold investor in Northern Colorado. Most difficult part, I'd say, like CapEx assessment, accurate kind of repairs and CapEx. and then I also work over the team.
Perfect. Joey?
Number one, because the numbers I like better.
Perfect.
But in a market like this, I like the higher number for the appreciation.
Gotcha. Nice. The first part's just a complaint about the market. It's not a hard part about analyzing a deal, right? You're just complaining that other people are willing to pay more. I can't fix that in analysis. There's nothing I can put in my spreadsheet other than when you type a price that's too high, be like, are you crazy, pops up.
Yeah.
I should do that. When the cash on cash is like negative 10% or worse, don't buy it. Yeah. Nick.
Nick, kind of like they were saying, figuring out rent, figuring out all the intangibles. And I'm going to go with deal two.
Let me get this straight. You're picking 8.6 over 18. People are just crazy. They must know me. One of these times I'm going to like switch it and it's not going to be seen. Be like, nope, that's wrong. Deal two is terrible. Curtis.
I'm Curtis. Things that stick me sometimes are pulling in all of the numbers, finding usable rent comps, pulling up taxes, taking a look at the neighborhood through street view, things outside the spreadsheet.
Gotcha. I know, in this market with those numbers, how did everyone not say both? I'll take them both. Yeah. Hello? Perfect. Curtis can buy the one, and you can buy the two, and you'll both be happy. Miles. There you go. On both sides. You'll take two, like you'll take them both? Just two. Awesome. Hello.
Hello. I'm Brandon. Probably the rent comps or accurate rent that I'm comfortable with. And
Awesome. Hello.
Hello, my name is Scott, and I would probably say rent comps too, but that's what she does. So, I would probably go with deal too, just because, yeah.
Just because, yeah.
Appreciation too, right?
Yeah, those are good points. Yeah. They're going to need a new marker soon. It's almost
better marker.
Oh, perfect.
I'm Lashana. The hardest part, I think, is time. Like, how long is this going to be? Years or maybe short term with partners, without partners, stuff like that. And then I think deal two, because of the growth.
Exaggerated?
I think the cash flow is exaggerated for the gross rent.
All right. Fair enough. Tammy.
Tammy, I think I'm probably pretty good on deal analysis, especially since I have you and James. and
I'm in a lot to
deal two, same reason as Denise.
Nice. What did you pick?
Deal two, same reason as Denise.
Man, look at that. Did we miss anybody? Nobody snuck in on me? Yeah, in a sec. And for those of you that don't, is this anybody's first night here? No? Perfect. So I'm Brian Williams, in case you don't know me. I would definitely buy them both if that was the case. James wants to talk about his reason for 350.
Yeah, so the interesting thing that occurred to me after I was looking at it for a little longer is if you have a X percent increase in rent over time, so let's say it's 10%, just to make the math easy, you have a $160 increase on the cash flow, which makes it go from $600 to $760. But a 10% increase on $2,800 actually increases it by $280. And since you're really getting this return on a very similar dollar amount of cash flow, then this one actually has a significant increase in cash-on-cash return because of the sheer dollar amount with the same percent increase.
Yep.
Plus the benefits of appreciation.
Yeah. I mean, the appreciation and just the fact that you're getting one loan for a larger amount as well, right? So if you're trying to build wealth, right, appreciation on this number is going to be more than appreciation on the other number at the same percent. Your loan amount's going to be built bigger, so your tenants are going to be paying down more money for you, and you're going to get that all in one loan. However, that was not the point of the exercise at all. But it's a great discussion. So the point of this exercise, when you're analyzing deals, and I talk about this every time that I teach a class that's like this, because people, you will go out and you'll be like, hey, what are you getting for your property, on whatever Main Street? And she'll tell me, oh, yeah, I'm getting, 15% cash on cash. And I'll be like, man, I can't find that anywhere. It's like 2% for me. And she's like, 2%? That's crazy. Like, you're buying the wrong properties, right? And this is real discussion, even with people who you might think are on the same caliber as James and I for analyzing deals. You will hear this from people who you wouldn't think would make this mistake, but they totally do. And that's that here were the two deals and the 200K duplex. Guess what? They didn't include 4K closing costs or 4K for initial repair when they were doing their analysis. They didn't include any vacancy, and they didn't include any maintenance.
But I don't have any vacancy, Brian.
I know.
This is the excuse I hear all the time. But I don't have any vacancy. That's why I don't take it into account when I do my cash.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to do when the next time somebody says that to me, I'm going to be like, yeah, I got an extra month of rent last year. I have negative vacancy.
That's the next one, too. But I really included that extra month because someone broke out of the lease early, and I got to keep their security deposit.
Yeah. I mean, I've had negative vacancy before. It's awesome. And they don't include maintenance, right? It's like, hey, here's the cost of the property. Here's what my mortgage payment is, taxes, insurance. Subtract that from the rent. Ah, voila, cash flow. But on the 350K duplex, right, it does include closing costs. It does include initial repairs. It puts vacancy at 5% and maintenance at 12%. And so if we take that 200K duplex, which looks amazing on paper, right, 18% cash on cash versus the 8.6, right, it really looks like $337 a month and cash flow, cash percentage on 8.43. And so Lashana hits the nail on the head when she looks at this number and goes, man, this ratio doesn't look right, right? That's a big hint. If the rent is 1,600 and you're like, I'm cash flowing 600, you're like, man, that's like your mortgage payment and like taxes and insurance and nothing else, right? So looking at that ratio, it's pretty interesting. So if you equalize it, right, 8.6 and 8.43, you know, make sure that you're talking about the same numbers. Hey, what are you using for maintenance? What are you using for vacancy? Are you having it managed, right? And and it doesn't matter which one you said, because if these two deals showed up on the market tomorrow and they were decent properties, you would buy them both, right? Because they're both amazing if you're getting 8.4, 8.6. You want to add something?
Yeah, it's sort of a side note, though, so I'm not sure it's really relevant.
Go ahead.
So, number one is, I hear this all the time from people when they start comparing numbers, and I don't even have to be involved in the conversation. I just watch it happen between two people. And the maintenance one is another big one where they're like, I didn't have to do any maintenance. The tenant's been taking care of it for 3 years, so my maintenance has been zero for 3 years. I'm like, oh, yeah, wait till turnover. You're going to get all that. You're going to pay all that back. And so yeah. That's one of the big things. The other one is, we're talking about whether to buy it or not, but it occurred to me that, you know, you said those numbers were out of whack. And if you've owned the property for a few years, those numbers may not be out of whack.
Yes.
And so, you know, just looking at those, if you're, you know, taking over something to get creative, there's reasons why those numbers might not be out of whack. But as for an immediate acquisition, it's hard to make them that extreme. Although you could have one duplex where you're paying all the utilities and all that other stuff, and so the numbers could be much different on one than another.
Yeah. So. Yeah, no doubt. All right. One other thing I just wanted to have one slide on before we kind of dig in tonight is just seller concession quick analysis. Does everyone understand what seller concessions are and why we want to use them? Does anyone not understand? Should I skip?
You should go over it anyway, because yeah. I think that people sometimes think they know what they are, and then they yeah. tell me that there is something different.
So if you're going to go out and you're going to buy a $300,000 property and you're going to have closing costs of $5,000, right? You could ask for $5,000 of seller concessions, but in our market, that's not likely to happen. So what typically happens is we make the offer at $305, right, and then ask for $5,000 back at closing. Why would we want to do this? Finance those closing costs, right? So if you're getting a, you know, 5% down loan, you're financing 95% of that $5K from the closing costs. If you're getting an 80% conventional loan, right, you're financing 80% of those closing costs. So instead of coming out of pocket $5K, you're only coming out of pocket $4K. Or you're only coming out of pocket $1K. You're financing $4K of it, right? So here's an example to illustrate how crazy this is if you haven't actually done the math. $255K purchase price with $5K of closing costs. Here's your monthly rent, your interest rate. 20% down, normal numbers. Result, basically, you know, we didn't roll anything in. We didn't roll the closing costs in of $5K, right? $228 per month in profit. So these are based on real numbers run in my spreadsheet on an actual house from when I bought it. If I would have simply taken that $5K and said, hey, seller, I'm going to give you $260 instead of $255. I'm going to roll that $5K in. What do you think is going to happen? What's going to happen?
So cash flow should go up by about $50 a month. I'm sorry, it should go down by about $50 a month. I'm sorry, about $25 a month because it's only $5K. And then the amount invested goes down by $5K, so your overall cash on cash return significantly increases.
Yeah, it's going to go down by $4K, right, the amount invested. So when you do this, right, it goes down $20, so James is very close, right, $208 per month profit instead of $228. And you got to save $4K. So you didn't have to invest $56K, you only invested $52K. So you've got $4K in your pocket. If we look at the difference of $20 a month, right, it takes 200 months to recoup that extra $4K. So would you rather have $4K in your pocket now, or would you rather wait 200 months, 16 years, to get this $4K back from $20 extra a month? Right? So seller concessions are super important. Do the math. And that's one of, we're not going to cover this anymore during the deal analysis, but this is why when James and I plug it in, it's always like, hey, it's $300,000 house, not 305 with $5K of seller concessions, to save money there.
Have you ever run numbers where seller concessions actually hurt? Where raising the price and getting it, I can't think of an example where I've run it where it has happened, but I don't know for sure.
practical terms, I mean, you need to make sure that appraisers at that raised price.
Agreed.
Yes.
If it appraises, I think that's a practical factor, yes. But if assuming it would appraise, is there any time when it would actually be worse from a cash-on-cash perspective? I can't think of an example of that.
This is that weird example where we were... where you can come from both sides with cash on cash. You can put more down and actually get better cash flow, and sometimes you can put more down and get worse cash flow. So there might be a case where if you're on the wrong side of that curve, that it does. But I've never seen it in run of numbers. So.
Ryan?
Yeah?
I'm really having a hard time following what you just did there. So what you did is offered them more than they were asking.
Yep.
And then you want 5,000 extra.
Yep.
To cover the closing costs.
Yep.
So the seller is paying for the closing.
Well, you're really paying for them, right?
Oh,
so instead of giving them $255, you're saying, I'm going to give you $5,000 more, and at closing, you're going to give it back to me so that I can finance it in my loan.
I see.
Yeah. Yep. In our market, it's very, very crazy. In a market 5 years ago, you could just ask for seller concessions off a regular price, right, and usually get it.
This is actually another benefit of new construction in our crazy market, is because a lot of builders would be totally willing to do seller concessions.
Right, because they're like, hey, as long as it appraises,
yeah,
it shows that our values are higher.
That's right.
Yep.
And so you get a little bump by buying those and being able to roll in your seller concessions.
Yep. So we used to have, in this presentation or a similar version of it, we used to spend like 7 slides going through what all the terms were. If you have the spreadsheet and you just hover over anything, it tells you exactly what it is. But I think it's super important to understand some of the basic terms. So I'm going to cover them before we get into the analysis. Gross potential income, right? This is when you say, I think this rents for $1,000 a month. Your gross potential income for the year is $12,000. Very good, right? Gross operating income, right? You hardly ever make gross potential income, right? You make gross operating income because this is actually the income that you got after your vacancy. So if you don't have any vacancy, right, it basically is gross potential income. But normally you've got at least a few days of vacancy during turnover, sometimes not, but this is gross operating income. So operating expenses, what are those? What do operating expenses for a property consist of?
Stationery.
Other than James. Shout him out. You guys know him.
Advertising.
Utilities. Utilities.
Maintenance.
HOA. Insurance. Taxes, right? What doesn't it include? Your mortgage, right? Your operating expenses are everything but your mortgage. And net operating income, right, is essentially, hey, what you actually made minus your operating expenses. So net operating income is the money left over after you've run the property but haven't yet paid your debt service. And this number is important because it can tell you how much you can afford to spend on your mortgage. So if it's your NOI turns out it's $12,000 for the year, you now know you can spend up to $1,000 a month on your mortgage to be break even on the property. Your profit is left, basically what's left after you pay your mortgage out of the NOI number. Debt service, obviously what it costs to pay your mortgage. And then cash flow, right, is simply, hey, what did we make minus our operating expenses minus our debt service? That's your profit. The cash on cash return, which is the number that we throw around all the time, right, is basically how much cash are we getting back versus how much did we put in. So if we got $12,000 back and we put $120,000 in to buy the property, we're getting 10% cash on cash. Does that make sense? Perfect. Return on investment. James covered this, what was it, last week? 2 weeks ago? I don't remember. Last week. And I have a slightly different view, and James may or may not agree with me. When I say ROI, return on investment, it's always the whole investment. It's not ROI is cash flow, ROI is not cash on cash percent to me. ROI is what's the total return, right? And that includes everything, appreciation, loan pay down, cash flow, and depreciation. Debt service coverage ratio. Who can tell me why this is important? qualifying for loans. James is the front row good student tonight. NOI divided by your debt service. So the NOI says this is how much you can afford to pay for your debt service. If you divide that by what your debt service actually costs you, if they were the same, you would get one, right? But what we would rather see is that NOI number is bigger, so we have profit left over, and the banks are looking for this to be like 1.2 or 1.33. So if your monthly debt service is $1,000, but you're actually your NOI is $1,300, you'd have a ratio of 1.3. Does that make sense? If it's less than one, it means you aren't paying your full mortgage. Rob? Yeah, because it basically means you're feeding the property. So the bank will take that and look at it and say, oh, you know, this property, you know, we want you to have at least a 1.25, so you only have a 0.9, which means we're going to basically say, well, you're going to have to feed it this much, so they're taking some of your income and feeding it to that property, which is going to make you qualify for less in most cases.
The other way of saying that is you need to earn more in order to
keep going.
Qualify with that same property.
Yep. And then cap rate, which we hardly ever use in this class, which is basically NOI divided by purchase price. Another way to think about this is if you bought the property with cash, right? NOI doesn't include debt service. You bought it with cash, this would be your rate of return. Any questions on the basic ones?
What does the NOI mean?
It's right up there. Net operating income.
Net operating
income. Yep. Any other questions? Or should I be like James? Anybody have any questions? Moving on.
The difference is you'll teach till 9. I will stop at 8.
When was the last time I wasn't done at 8? Yeah. All right, we're going to 10 o'clock tonight. Gear up, people. So, in order to analyze a property, we got to go find them, right? So how do we do that? Hire James as your realtor. Get listings through my site. And basically, he can put any criteria you want in. 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom, Fort Collins only, whatever you want. He can send it to you. He can send it to you however often you want. It can be as soon as the property lists. It can be once a week. But get signed up for that so that you start getting properties emailed to you so that you can go, oh, every day I've got something to look at. I can go analyze this property in practice. Kahloproperty.com, which is the front-facing or the public-facing version of the tools that James uses as a realtor, is also a great resource. It's way more up-to-date than Zillow and Redfin. I can't tell you how many times I've had people call me and be like, hey, I'm looking to do a lease option, and this house is on Redfin. And I'm like, yeah, it sold last month, right? It's been sold for 60 days. I don't know why you think it's still available. It shows available on Zillow. I'm like, yeah, it's out of date. Use the amazing tools that James has developed that are proprietary to him on his website, and we're going to cover those tonight and use them and kind of show you how to sort through properties. Or go search Craigslist. Find for sale by owners, analyze those. Find for rent things, call them up and say, hey, are you interested in selling? And then analyze those properties, right? Or lastly, send your own marketing. There's all sorts of ways to find them. There's like probably each one of these is a class on its own that we've already taught. This one, as you can see, number of people that thought this was 5. James.
Hey, before you go on,
yeah.
Are you going to cover somewhere how many deals you typically analyze in order to find a potential one to go see or anything like that?
I don't, but you'll get the picture when we start analyzing, I think.
So, like, for somebody who's brand new, never really done this before, how long do you spend each day analyzing properties when you're in a, like, really active buying state? Are you spending 5 minutes analyzing one deal? Are you spending an hour? What are you spending typically to analyze?
If I'm, like, actively looking to buy? Like now?
Like either when you're starting out or like what's the range so that someone has a perspective? Is this
a
day thing or just like an hour a day?
It's somewhere between those two, I think. All right, it depends on how many properties come across my desk that day, right? So if I get a list of 20 properties, which used to be the case, right? It'd be like, here's 20 properties that are now for sale. And I'd go through and I'd filter them down to the ones that I wanted to analyze. And then I'd spend the time to analyze those. But practice gets you to the point where you don't have to necessarily plug everything into the spreadsheet to know if you need to go see it or not. And we're going to try and cover that. Probably the ratio that you're looking at, you know, if you analyzed 100, you'd go see 10 and you'd make an offer on one or two.
Okay.
Something like that, right? I mean, I can't tell you how many properties I How many properties did we look at in 2013? Like 200 or 300?
Yeah, I mean, definitely a lot. I'm just trying to get a gauge for someone else who's looking at it. Is this like, you know, you analyze the deal, you're going to see it? Or
no.
Is this you analyze 10, you're going to see one? Or?
Yeah, probably that. And it used to be better, right? But now it's a little bit more difficult just because of the market. So this is the most common question. I knew it would be. That's why I put the slide up front. How do you know what it rents for? It's every investor's kind of like, oh, I really just don't know how to figure this out. And if you're wrong, right, it could be a really big deal. If you think it rents for $1,800 but it only rents for $1,500 and now you're feeding the property, this is where investors get scared, right? Because you can go look up taxes. You can go call your insurance person. But until you're actually putting the ad on Craigslist and getting phone calls, it's very hard to know exactly what it's going to rent for. So there's some resources that can help you. Craigslist is my favorite one. You go out and you look in the square mile of that same property and you find, hey, this one's very similar. This is what it's renting for. This is what this other one that looks kind of similar. This is an extra bedroom. It's renting for more. And you can kind of low end and high end of what you think it's going to be. And we're going to do this tonight. Tonight is not a me teach you how to use the spreadsheet. It's actually me teach you using the spreadsheet in real time with real deals. James can now run rent comps for clients. What's the name of the tool?
It's actually Rentmeter. It's a pro.
Oh, is it? Perfect.
And you should replace that. Actually, that bullet is slightly wrong.
All right. What do you want me to have it say?
And Tammy can run rent comps.
I'll leave it like it is. If you have a property manager, right, or you're thinking about hiring one, call them up and say, hey, I'm thinking about buying this property. What do you think it rents for? Right? If you do this with a property manager that's not your property manager and you do it over and over and over, they're going to stop taking your calls. So don't just overuse that resource. Use your own knowledge. Do you have other rentals that are similar? Right? Or do you have a rental that's slightly lower class where you're like, I know it's at least going to get this, and then it's not as nice as this other property that my buddy owns, so I know it's kind of bordered in between these two numbers. Think about those things. You can call James and say, hey, I'm thinking about renting a three-bedroom, two-bath property, and it's in, you know, Windsor, and this is the neighborhood it's in, and he might know clients that might be willing to share their rental data, and so he'll usually text me and say, what did this rent for, right? And I'll be like, why do you want to know? I just like to give him a hard time most of the time with that one. But really, there's no substitute for you guys going out, seeing properties yourself, and understanding what they're going to rent for. Right? When you walk a property, you can kind of go, okay, this seems like it's $1,700 a month. It's in Fort Collins. It's a three-bed, two-bath. But if you only go to one, you don't get that feel. If you kind of go to a lot of them, right? And one way to speed this up is pretend to be a tenant and go call some for rent ads and go do 10 showings on a weekend, right? Go see 10 for rent properties, right? Don't call my ads because I don't want to waste my time, but for all the other landlords that are happy to show you properties, you know, it's a great way to at least acclimate to, hey, this is where things are at, right? This is a four-bedroom and this is a three-bedroom, Fort Collins, maybe in Loveland. Go see them. If properties you're looking at and you were going to buy them actually turn into rentals, which sometimes you can tell by, hey, there's a tenant in it and the lease isn't up, go see, hey, what did you rent that for? Or go watch Craigslist and see if an ad shows up, right? And then you'll know, hey, what are they trying to get for it? And then maybe call them up and say, hey, you know, what'd you actually get? Most landlords might not tell you, but look at listings that currently have tenants. James says no.
I found them to be really low most of the time.
Yes. So you can look at those listings, and the experience will tell you most of the time landlords aren't raising their rents appropriately. So they're going to be low. So you can at least know, I can probably pretty easily get what they're getting now, probably plus a couple $100.
Most of the time, if you're running your analysis using the rent that they're getting on the property, it looks horrible.
You'd never buy anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you going to show how to make that adjustment? Because that's one thing we did not do.
I don't know what we're going to do because it's real time.
Cool.
I haven't prepped it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we'll cover as much as we can. Or just, you know what? Screw it, buy a property and go rent it and figure out what it rents for. That's the easiest way to do it. So tonight is really all about class participation. I'm going to kind of go with what you guys would like me to do. I probably should have brought a keyboard that was hooked up. But
do you want to sit here?
No, I'll be good. So what I did, we're going to pull potential deals from two sources. One is the last, I don't know, there's I think 9 properties in here that came across my desk from James sending me deals. Some of them are under contract. We're going to pretend that they're all not for the benefit of tonight. And we're going to pick ones based on exactly how I would do it or how you guys would do it. And we're going to actually go through and decide, hey, is this worth seeing? Is this actually worth plugging into the spreadsheet? And there's a lot of factors that go into this, right? And so I could probably at this point now look through these 9, and I actually, you know, from where I was at, I wasn't in an active buying position, so none of them really stood out to me, but I didn't look at any of them in detail. So we're going to start with that, and then we're also going to take James's awesome tool, which is over here. Did you run it? You did. Which shows you cash on cash versus price to total square foot. And we're going to kind of start at the high end where it says, hey, it looks like you could get 5% cash on cash. That seems interesting to me, right, in Fort Collins? Anybody want to buy a 5% cash on cash property in Fort Collins? I would. Yeah. So we're going to start there, and we're going to work our way back and see, are those actual deals? Are they things we would want to buy? And then when it's time, we'll come and we'll plug it all into the spreadsheet. And for those of you that wanted an update to the spreadsheet, I moved these numbers so James can't gripe anymore.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
So James's big gripe was that this number is not really the same as this number. So these have moved. I added something else. I don't even remember what else I added.
Sum of the returns?
I did not do the sum of the returns. I was short on time. No. What else did I added something else. Oh, I added your seller concession percentage, too. I might have done something else. So that is our class, what we're going to do for tonight. And we're going to start over here, and we're just going to pull the first deal up. And so when I analyze a deal, what do you guys look for when you start analyzing a deal? Where it is. Yeah. So I always want to know where it is too, right? I don't know if you can see this. This is I-25. This is Mulberry, right? And this is a little tiny cul-de-sac that it sits on that's out there kind of by itself. Oh, what do you notice about this? Maybe you can't see it. We saw one similar.
We saw
the one next door.
One north of it, right?
Yep. So what do you notice about this property?
What I know this property.
You can no longer talk.
So it's east of I-25. So is it annexed, or I want to find out if it's a weird tax area?
Yeah, so I'm not even there, right? Those are like last considerations for me. I want to know, like, am I at all interested in buying this property? I'm looking at the map, and I'm like, it's a cul-de-sac, but what is this? This is a creek that actually touches the end of the road. Like, is there a flood issue here? Maybe. I happen to know that the neighborhood next door actually flooded pretty badly. So that was the first thing I thought when I saw it. What's the next thing you guys like to know?
It has a mobile home type of thing just northwest of it.
Oh, yeah? This?
Yep.
Very good eye. So Dan points out, these are all mobile homes, right? So you're kind of back into that, and maybe you don't care. It's across the creek. Maybe everything will flood and wash away. I don't know. But so for some people, right, you might look at that and go, does anyone want to buy this? Like, if it's a good deal, would you buy it in this location? Raise your hand if you'd buy this if it was a good deal. Joey says, right. So how do you determine when to stop looking? Are we done with this deal? How many of you guys want to keep digging into this particular deal? No one.
So just a comment on
this.
I had one of these come up. It was off market, and I went out and looked at that. And I think what struck me was that you're in the middle of a bunch of multiplex, fourplex buildings.
Yeah.
All of them in different condition with different owners. A shared road. I'm not even sure who maintains the road. And, you know, for those reasons, just decided not to look at it any further.
Yeah. Was it this property or was it on Loma Linda?
It was on Loma Linda. It was the first one on the left there.
Okay. But this one or this one?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, the issue for me is, you know, if that's my product and it's surrounded by a bunch of other crap, then you can't do anything to, you know, to improve that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that totally. I mean, I've bought a property. Yeah, so a lot of the times when you buy multifamily, like fourplexes or sixplexes or eightplexes, right, they're in an area where there's a bunch of that, right? And so how do you compete? And I think part of it is knowing how to manage the property well, right? I've bought a property on a street where I guarantee my units were the nicest units on the street, and they were managed the best, and it worked out wonderfully, right? And so as long as you don't have lots of, you know, drugs or gangs or things of that nature in there, I think it's okay. And the way Fort Collins builds, which is very different than other places I've lived, you know, there's mixed use, multifamily, and then large houses all in the same neighborhood, right? And so it's a very different thing. But yeah, if you don't want to be around a lot of other multifamily, then this isn't for you. Anyone want to dig into this deal at all? All right, perfect.
Yeah.
We're going to dig in a little more. So what's the next thing you guys want to see?
How much it rents for.
How much it rents for. Perfect. That's what I want to know, too. And so what do we look? Right here, we've got three beds and two baths. Hey, I'm interested. Those are decent. They're bigger size. Maybe they'll rent for more. They're 1,264 square feet. There's four units. What's the rent? Not available. How is this possible? No one's living there? You don't know what the rent is? You've lost your leases? Come on, landlords. Well, how do we figure it out instead? Well, what's potential rental income? Somebody take 57,540 and divide it by 12, and then divide that by 4. And you're going to come up with about $1,198.75. I'm just good with math. I'm kidding. This is the one calculation I did because I was like, I want to see actually what it is. So it's about $1,200 a month, right? Or total $4,800 a month. What's the purchase price of this unit? Yeah, so $4,800 on $700,000, you know, is that a good ratio? It's lower than 1%, but 1% hardly ever comes into play in our market, right? It definitely does occasionally, but it's, you know, it's reasonable, right, for our market. So, okay, what do you want to see next? I know what I want to see next. I want to see what the inside looks like, right? I want to see the pictures because the outside is, like, ugly, right? It's got this ugly green. What do you notice about the outside right away that's a kind of, it's a personal red flag for me? What do you notice? I love what different people notice. Car parked on the grass, didn't notice that. I was too busy looking at the building. I've seen this weird shingle thing down the side, and that doesn't bother me. What's the other thing about that? Flat roof, right? Flat roof doesn't last as long as a regular roof. I don't know much about flat roofs, so personally, I'm like, something else I'm going to have to learn if I'm going to invest in that building. So let's take a look. Looks like they've got their own, right? I pick up, hey, they've got their own individual yards. That's all right. I don't mind that. They all have their individual satellite dishes, too, to go along with their yards. It looks like the front is fenced. It looks decent, like cleanliness. The yard doesn't look great. Somebody's either getting evicted or moving out. Which is what?
It is paved. I've been there. It's just like all.
It's not very well paved. Yeah. So you probably have baseboard heat, right? It looks like water baseboard heat. Doesn't look like electrical. Right? That unit from the blurry picture, I don't know. Huh?
How can you tell it's boiler?
It's a corner. It's a much taller and it's a corner thing. They hardly ever have corners of electrical. Yep. I can't tell if that's tile. It looks like tile here. Right? So part of it's tile. That's good flooring. It's going to last a while. Carpet doesn't look bad. This particularly looks new. Fantastic. Kitchen looks nice. Are you guys surprised yet? Doesn't look like the outside maybe thought it was going to be, but maybe this is only the one unit that's like newly done. Bathroom fully tiled. Looks decent. Backyard, we know that's probably a recent picture or a really old picture. So I kind of felt like I only saw 1 of 4 units, right? That's the next thing that I noticed, so I'm probably going to come down here and read this, right? Oh, yeah. Unit B was remodeled recently. Guess which one they gave you photos of? Unit B. Anybody want to guess what unit A, C, and D look like? Right? Worse. Guaranteed. Right? Each unit has a separate storage closet. There's some potential extra income. Right? There's a way to think about that. Each one has its own washer and dryer hookups. They're in the kitchen, but they have hookups. So that's good. And they have a great view of the mountains. So how many of you guys are interested now that you saw the inside of Unit B? Is this a pass? Anybody think, yeah, I still like this property?
I don't have anything against it at this point, you know, other than the outside.
I want to know what the cash flow is.
You want to know what the cash flow is. Excellent. Let's do it. Can you guys see this? Probably not. The spreadsheet's too big. We should have brought the mini version. I'm going to have to make a mini version of the spreadsheet. That's right. So what's our purchase price?
$695.
And what do you think closing costs are going to be?
$6,000.
$6,000 or $7,000. So let's just pop the purchase price up, $7,000. What are we going to have to put down?
$25.
Okay. Closing costs, we'll put that in back at $7,000. So we're just getting seller concessions. We're not lease optioning it. What do we think the interest rate on this is going to be? Do you happen to know what rates were today?
4.75. I don't, not for.
Huh?
4.75 probably.
All right. So let's be conservative for now and put 5 in. 30-year loan. What do we think we're going to get for rent on these?
At this, or are you going to do a catch-up?
Were they all 3.2s?
They're all 3.2s. Yeah. So they're assuming 1,200. You tell me what you want to do. Because these are the decisions you have to make, right? Do you want to do work? Are you going to go in and you're not going to know until you see it? So what do you assume as you do your analysis sitting in front of your computer before you decide if you want to go see it? Okay, so today's rent, which was $4,800.
Yeah, very close. Hey, so I got a question about your interest rate assumption. So you said let's be conservative and use 5%. So if you're doing deal analysis at home by yourself and the deal doesn't look good, but you use 5%, and really it could have been 4.5 if you really don't know.
You're jumping to the end of the analysis, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
so
I'm
we'll
trying
get
to
there.
Say, you know, because we may not come back to it, and I want to make sure we have the discussion. You made an assumption about this. If later on when you get to the end and you say, this doesn't meet my criteria, but you had made assumptions early on, that could have changed it.
Yep, and we're going to cover that.
Okay.
Yep. So what do we think vacancy is? 2%.
4 columns. Yeah, 3%.
2 or 3? Yeah. And so if it was me in this particular unit, I think 3 to 5, right? I don't know. Loma Linda, probably harder to rent than center of Fort Collins. But I think 3 is an appropriate guess. And you can always lower your vacancy by being a better manager and advertising early and dropping rent. Taxes.
It is in the path of growth.
Yep.
They're growing down Mulberry and cleaning stuff up and improving things. At some point, maybe a while.
Yep. So taxes. They're telling us what taxes are from the tax year. We could go out and verify this. In the interest of time, I'm actually not going to. Insurance. Insurance on a $700,000 fourplex. Anybody have a guess at what you think that is? Yeah, so one of the things we're going to do is we're going to say, hey, James, can you pull up the floodplain map and tell me if it's in a floodplain, right? But $2,500, anybody else have? I'm trying to think about.
I think that's low. I think it's closer to $4,500.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Three new insurance.
That's insurance. What do you think insurance is? Yeah, that's probably reasonable. Utilities. So my plan with multifamily is to build back all the utilities, right? We can look at what they're saying utilities are, right? And then we can try and verify them. They're saying utilities don't exist. So perhaps they are billing them all back to the tenant. In either case, I'm going to get to that point where I'm billing 100% of the utilities if they're staying in my name back. So I'm going to leave that blank. If you knew what they were and they were billing back part of it, you could say, oh, they're billing back, you know, $200 a month, but really the, you know, utilities are $400 a month, and you could stick that number in there.
So the tenant's paying electric in this case, and the water is paid by the landlord.
Yep. So we're going to need to bill that back. Maintenance, what do we think maintenance is on this one? 12% enough? 15, 18, 10, 8, 0?
I would like to check, you know, visit and check, okay, the date on the water heaters. And
yep, but this is all, this is like you just got a listing from James and you're sitting at home. You can't just go and look at every property to figure that stuff out, right? So how do we analyze it so that we don't spend every property that comes, we have to go see it to do the analysis, right? That's the goal. So worst case scenario is like 100. Right? All the money goes to maintenance. That's probably not reasonable. We want to make reasonable assumptions based on what we know.
And then you adjust it once you see
it. Yep. So 15 seems reasonable. Might be more initially, because if you have to do some renovation on the units, but you don't know. So you assume, hey, the other units are in rentable condition. Great. Where are we at? We've got monthly cash flow of $643. And cash on cash of 4.4%. That's not too bad. So let's come down to the overall analysis.
And to be clear, you're doing that unmanaged.
Yep.
Okay.
So this is unmanaged. How many people want to manage this? Nobody. What are we going to pay for a manager? Okay. Perfect. James isn't going to let the audience catch on at all tonight. He's just going to do it all for you.
What do you mean?
It's class participation, not James' answer ahead of time.
I know what I would use for all these numbers.
Yeah, I know. So now it's $177 a month at 1.21%. Is $1,200 a month reasonable for rent? Right? Is anybody buying that property if that's the real number? Brendan's hemming and hawing because he knows how hard it is to find above zero in Fort Collins. Right? And it's in the path of growth. So these are all things you have to look at and consider. It's a good big loan, right? So if you've only got 10 loan spots and you're filling them and you get a much larger loan in one of them and you're still positive, there's benefit to that. Depends on your personal situation. So is $1,200 a month reasonable for rent here? Based on what?
It's a three-bedroom.
Yeah, but it's location.
Yeah,
it's right on Mulberry.
1,400.
And then back into your stream.
Open space.
Convenience.
Nah.
Easy access to I-25 and Mulberry. Zip down Mulberry into Old Town. Super close to Old Town.
Right, so in order to figure that out, what are we going to do? We're going to come over here. And this is just Craigslist for Fort Collins. I'm switching to map view right here. Switch to map view. This will make your life really easy. So Mulberry and I-25, oh, let there be something for rent on Loma Linda. That would be great.
Is that property?
Probably. It sure is. So guess what they're advertising it for? $1,295. It's available December 1st. So they're still working on it, so I'm not as concerned there. It's a little weird it's not rented. I guess it's only, if it was me, it would already be rented, hopefully. But here's all the stuff. Let's see, anything interesting? Pets okay. Well, that's what it said. This is true, and they do that, right? Hey, we've got one vacant unit. We can't take pictures of the tenant's possessions. We're posting pictures of a unit that's in the building, and now you're going to come and show up, and it's going to be worse. We're assuming that only one of them is renovated.
Yeah, but at this price, the monthly, it's $5,180.
Yep. So,
instead of $4,800.
Yeah. So it's weird because this is the only one. If there was another one, right, and this is the problem, in this particular area because there's not a lot else for rent. So you would need to find similar areas. So that's a Fort Collins apartment for rent. That's two bedroom, so it's not super similar. I don't even know what's up here. Are these big houses?
Yeah, this
is. Yep.
That's water line.
Yeah, so this is tough because there's not a lot of rental data. In the summer, you'd obviously have a little bit more, right? Which is why it's easier to do rent comps in the summer. What's the address of this? We're going to pull up James's fancy tool. 407, whoa, mouse. It's like the most inefficient keyboard and mouse thing ever. Do I need Fort Collins? Oh, they got it. Does it always take that long to?
I don't know.
Do you know if we use internet time machines?
Tammy, is it broken?
Like archive.org?
Yeah.
If they'll actually go look at the road comps. I doubt they do.
Like last summers?
I doubt that they do crisis at that level.
I think you're not logged in or something.
Oh, really?
Because it's not letting me click through. Oh, yeah, you're logged in.
Okay. Good there.
Nope. Don't do it.
You should put in something, yeah. Like a three bedroom, yep. You can adjust those things.
Sure. So they're looking, and again, tough property, right? Here's our property. There's a bunch that they're pulling from up here that are not similar. So this is an example where, hey, these are houses. They're not in a fourplex. These two, probably the same thing. So there aren't very many good rent comps on this particular item. Let's see if there's any that are closed.
There's one on Loma Linda already, County 14 and Loma Linda apartment, though.
Where? That's the one we're looking at. That's the one that's advertised.
Okay.
Yeah. So in this case, it's really difficult. You kind of have to know, hey, what is a three-bedroom, two-bath in Fort Collins in this neighborhood going to rent for? So they think it's $1,295. That's what they're advertising it for. So great. I would probably say I'm going to assume that that's what they're going to get, and that's going to end up being, what, 5180 or 50. That'll definitely look good. And so, hey, now we're at 3.1%, $454 a month. Right? And again, huh?
Managed,
right? So that's almost, 3% managed. And if our interest rate really is only 4.5, which if you were interested, you'd want to go find out, hey, what's the interest rate? If it's 4.5, now it's $613 and 4.19%. It's in Fort Collins. It's in the path of growth. Did this change anybody's mind?
Acceptable,
right? Better than you might find elsewhere. And if you're able to go in there and renovate and get $1,400, this is going to look even better.
So let's talk about us not getting that rent right now.
Yeah, let's talk about it. So you go in, and it turns out the other two units only get $1,000 a month, right? You go and you look at them. They're on a lease. It's like $995. This one actually gets $1,200. So you've got $4,200 total in rent that's coming in, right? How bad is that going to hurt? Negative $100 managed, right? Negative $100 a month. Can you improve those rents later? How much do you need to improve them to get rid of that $100? Not much, right? So is $1,000, do you feel like you could rent three-bedroom, two-bath apartments in Fort Collins for $1,000 all day long? I kind of do, right? So another way to look at that is leave this number where it is. If you think it's 5180, there's a rent sensitivity table over here. And you can plug in, hey, I just want to see the difference on $100. So it'll plug your 5180. It'll take it down $100, down $100, down $100. It'll show you your cash flow for the year and your cash on cash percentage. So you can play around with that, right?
$100 total?
This is cash flow total for the year.
The $100 is more a month.
Yep.
So $25 more per unit.
Yep. And you can change that, right? So if you wanted it to be, because there's four units, right, $200 is basically $50 per unit. So 5180 to 4980, right, we just saw that, 4.2 to 3.2, 2.2, 1.2, 0.2. So as long as you're close to getting, you know, $1,000 per unit, you're going to be break-even, essentially, managed, which is pretty good. And that's with 15% maintenance. All right. Anybody going to go buy that deal? Nope. Nobody's buying it. They didn't like it.
I would look at it. Why not?
I would look at it.
Interesting thing. So basically, you email me and you say, hey, I want rent comps on this. And I send you over that report where it says 1500. What are you doing?
I'm looking at the report going, those are houses, houses, houses.
Okay. So you're evaluating it, and then you're not using that number.
Yep. And so for me, honestly, I don't own stuff in Old Town or on Mulberry. So when I pull this up, and even in an active buying phase, right, if I'm looking here at the favorites, I'm looking at this and I'm like, I look at where it's at, and for me, I'm like, yeah, it's a pass, right? I might look at the rents and see, hey, it's $1,200 a month, but I'm not going to do all the stuff that we just did. I'm probably just going to be like, yeah, I'm done. I'm tossing that in the trash, and I'm moving on to the next one. Right? But that's just my buying criteria. And I think it's super important that you guys have buying criteria written down so that you're not, oh, well, this one, oh, this is kind of interesting, and you're just chasing, oh, this property looks good. Oh, so does this one. And you're just not focused. So next one we're going to do, I'm going to take one from the far right of James's tool, which is 5049 Fawn Lane, which is apparently in the mountains. Gorgeous location and million-dollar views, tucked in the hills above Horsetooth. So we're going to pass on that. I'm not sure why that one's in here.
It's actually Fort Collins address. It's in Horsetooth Lake.
Oh. Yeah, so these are all just properties, right? These are not just the other list. This list is multifamily because that's what I had sent to me. The next one down is a condo or a townhome. So let's take a look at that one. Is there a way for me to easily pull up the... Is this going to pull it up? Perfect. So where's it at? Rose Creek Way. Looks like this is...
Oh, it's over by Autumn Ridge.
Trilby, yeah. And this is LeMay. And it is over here.
Yeah.
Trying to picture where that is. That is...
Yeah.
Provincetown, huh? That's right by the lake. So, built in 2004. Who's interested? Yeah. Let's take a look inside really quick. Tiled floors, carpet, decent paint, updated doors and windows, obviously, because it was built in 2004. Stainless steel dishwasher with some oak cabinets. Stainless steel everything. Yep, washer dryer hookups are there. That's definitely a king bed and still some space in the bedroom. Two sinks in the bath, walk-in closet, another bath.
How many baths is
it? Three. Three bed, three bath, two-story townhome in great condition, open floor plan. It's either a basement or it's a bedroom office. Unclear of which one it is. All right, so who is interested in, is that like something you would analyze?
Yeah,
for $235, that seems crazy, right?
Yeah, that
seems a little
too true. No, I would look at HOA.
I'm looking. Is it not in here? Oh, there it is. Yep. So HOA monthly is $205. All right, what was our price?
$235.
How much for closing? $4,000? How much are we putting down?
On the closing, is there like a percentage rule of thumb that's good to use for that? Or?
that are just fixed no matter what the price
yep.
is. And then there's usually about 1 point origination or something.
Yeah. Yep. Down payment. Well, it's just a single unit.
Yeah, so it's either 20%, or if you really want to be aggressive, you can use 25 and pay the PMI.
Pay 25 and pay the PMI.
Sorry, pay 15 and pay the PMI.
Yeah, and so one of the things that you're going to need to call on this is that if it's a condo, it says townhome, but it still may be a condo. If it's an unwarrantable condo, you may have to put 25% down anyway. So there are lenders that will do it with less, but let's assume it's 20%. We'll just leave our interest rate at 4.5. And what do you think this rents for? You guys? Yeah? All right. 1550. Anybody think higher or lower?
Yeah, I'd probably do 16. It's Loveland School District.
Yeah, which I don't think matters to a lot of people, but it does matter to some. So our HOA is 205 a month, right? What's 205 times 12? 2450, 2460. Insurance on, this is where it matters,
yep.
right? Is it actually a townhome or is it a condo? It says townhome. Yeah, but it's. I bet with the HOA like that, I'm almost betting it's policy walls in. So on a condo, you pay insurance from studs in most of the time, right? The HOA handles all the outside of the building. On a townhome, it could be studs in, or you could be paying for the maintenance on the outside. We're going to just assume that we're paying for it on the outside. What do you think a $235,000 house or townhome insurance is? If you were living in it, maybe. Not if it's a rental.
I think it's
more than that. I'm saying that we're covering it all. That's the assumption. Pretend it's a $235,000 house.
$120 a month.
Yeah. I'd say it's about
$1,200. I think that's a little high, though.
Sure. But you can call your insurance guy. Taxes, are taxes in here? You know this sheet better than me.
I don't use that sheet.
Huh. Perfect.
I use the MLS.
That's great. So here's an example where we don't know what the taxes are, right?
No, no, go down. It's probably on there.
Is it? I didn't see it.
Taxes and terms right there.
Yeah, it's not there. No. So if you don't know what the taxes are, right, what can we easily do? Yeah. Like the hardest way ever. I should have James type. Right? So search on assessor, come in and pop our, what was our address? I guess I can't paste the whole thing in. I know, but it's, yeah, it only wants the number. That's why. 6708 Rose Creek Way. 6708. Perfect. And we are number three. Perfect.
What's the legal address if you find out that it's a condo or townhome?
Condo. Condo map. So insurance is probably less, given that it's a condo. Yep. Tax history. Here you go. 2016, taxes were 941. The year before that, 933. So 942 it is. We'll stick that in there. Yeah. So I actually have a condo policy for insurance, and it runs about $700 a year, depending on what value you want to put it at. But there's that. What do you think maintenance is, given that this is a condo and the outside, the roof, and all that stuff is probably taken care of for you? 8?
I'd probably use 8, but I think I'm a little more conservative.
Aggressive?
No, I'm conservative, meaning that I'm making sure I set aside money to
Yeah. So I'd probably put 10. I can see 8. I can see either one. Are we having this managed? Or are you going to manage it yourself?
Yeah,
Managed, perfect. So 10%. Let's see where we're at. Negative 53 a month, managed.
What's the monthly rent?
1,600. So let's go find out. Down in Fort Collins, down to LeMay and Trilby, and it was right in here.
Yeah.
So here's a two-bedroom townhome. Oh, that looks familiar, right? It's two-bedroom for $1,300. Two master suites. So
that's the fixed-up unit.
Yep. What else is in this area? $1,350, awesome two-bed, two-bath townhome. $1,695, great home in a great location, big backyard, AC. Detached, it looks like. Yep. So $1,695, at least right now, is probably your ceiling, right? This is a house, not a townhome. So
what's the square footage of the townhome one that we're looking at?
It's very similar to that. Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Did we look at pictures?
Of this one? Yeah. Yep. We looked at all those. So it's not as interesting as it may have first appeared, right? It's almost like Loma Linda might be a better deal.
See, I don't know if I would agree with that.
Perfect.
Got a property that's more in town. It's something I would rather hold in my portfolio over a longer period of time to do this one, even though the cash on cash is less attractive.
Yeah, and the problem, so having owned a property with an HOA that has $200 a month is, when I bought my condo, the HOA was $205. It is now $260 a month, right? Which adds up really, really fast. HOAs are condo cash flow killers. They just really eat into it. If we delete that 2460, right, now it's 4%, $152 a month, and that's managed.
But then you have to increase
insurance. Oh, yeah.
And maybe
the insurance cost might be a lot higher. Yeah, did we adjust the insurance? Yeah.
Depends on the value you actually put on what you want to be able to pay for inside, right? So I have a policy on a condo that's almost identical to this, so it's very close to this, and even if you change this to 600, you're talking about a savings of $100 a year. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, so put it back to 700 if you would, and then change maintenance to 8%.
Sure, and so I eliminated management before I do that, just so that you can see if you're willing to manage it yourself, it's still positive, right? James wants to drop maintenance to 8% and put management back in. And James says, hey, it's break even.
Yeah.
So would you rather buy Loma Linda at 3-4% managed and have an older property in a part of town you may not want, or would you rather have something in central or kind of central, more central in town location in Fort Collins that's break even, that's probably going to appreciate?
Well, I don't know about the appreciate. I think the potential of appreciation of this property, it's really limited compared to Loma Linda. You can just redo the outside, make it, you can improve onto it.
So it'll still be on Loma Linda.
Yeah, and it will still be that weird roof structure unless you're going to go put brand new. I mean, that's an unusual roof look.
Yeah.
Well, what about your market to resell it?
Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
Condo, you can sell that.
Condo sells to, 90% of the market, right? 95% of the market, whereas Loma Linda. Yeah, this is the beauty of analyzing deals, right? What I think is great, you might think sucks. What you think is great, I might think sucks, which is awesome because this is why we're not all buying the exact same property, right? Which is good for all of us. So if you had to buy one of these two properties, you have to raise your hand. How many of you would buy Loma Linda based on what we just saw? How many of you would buy the condo? Yeah, I would buy the condo.
This is like our discussion about the only one property that I like of yours and how you're like, how come you only like this one property of mine?
Yeah.
And it's like a weird property. It's not even like one that you think that I'd like.
Yeah. So Would you guys rather do another? Which list do you want to go from? You want to keep going down the cash on cash list?
Yeah.
Or do you want to go back to the ones that were listed?
What were my assumptions on that, like the automated assumptions? What did it use?
$15.68 for rent, $21 in cash flow.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
It's close. Which one? This one? Jackson Avenue? Perfect. So Joe says, I like blue. Says, yep, let's see it. What do you see when you guys look at this building originally?
Go to the backyard.
Yeah, I will tell you what I see right off the bat is a roof that is not sloped enough to have a shingle like this. That is the wrong roof type for that building, in my opinion. And I'm not a contractor, and I'm not a roofer, but you have to have at least like 1-to-1 or I don't know what it is, like 8-to-12 rise to run. This looks really, really flat.
Could
I mean,
be the angle.
Could be.
But at the same time, if it isn't, then it just means that you're going to have to replace that roof more often.
Yep.
That's what it means.
Yep. So inside looks nice or bad?
It looks like LVT. It does not look like real wood to me, though.
Yeah, it's not real wood. There's a seam. So, what do you think about that kitchen shot? How many of you like to open your oven and pull your pie out while you're getting a beer? Because it's not happening in this particular house at all. Right? So.
But for rental, is that how important is that? You're not looking for something you're going to live in. Right?
You're not looking for something you're going to live in. You're looking for something that 90% of the people would want to live in and rent, right? And I think, where do people spend their time? Kitchen, living room, bathroom, if you're James, or bedroom, right? And so I've definitely had people walk through my rentals and, you know, oh, you know, this is a little close, or, you know, they stand in there and they open stuff. Is it a deal killer? I don't think so, right? I mean, people have clearly lived here before. It looks nice.
What it likely will mean is that you'll have slightly higher turnover. People will stay shorter periods of time. And it may stay, you know, 2 years instead of 3 years is kind of the thought process.
Yep. Yeah. So, 300, how many people are still out? Joe, do you still want to keep going with this?
No, I'm good.
Oh, he's good. He saw the railroad track. Did you not know they were there?
I did after I looked at it.
Oh. Yeah, so look right where it's at, right? It's sitting right on the railroad tracks. So, some people don't mind buying on the railroad tracks, right? And we've talked to tenants who live right next to them when we're looking at multifamily. And it's like, how's the train? And the guy's like, yeah, it's pretty loud. And we're like, how loud? He's like, loud like you pause your TV and wait for it to go by. And you can't, if you're in the middle of a conversation, you just stop talking and you wait, right? And but
to be clear, in conversation we had, they were doing sign language. The tenants were deaf.
No. And so he goes on to say, but you get used to it, right? And you just don't, it's just a part of life. It's like if you live underneath, you know, the flight path of an airport when they're coming in for a landing or takeoff, there's a lot of people in Vegas that I don't know how you could live in the neighborhoods, right? Every 6 minutes, like, you're like, oh my gosh, every 6 minutes? And you stand there, and like, I waited outside of one house for like a half an hour, and literally, I was like so annoyed, I didn't even go inside. Because I was just like, there's no chance I'm living here.
So the comment on the train, I have a client who like has a penthouse in Old Town Fort Collins on the train track. In Old Town Fort Collins, and you're willing to make that trade-off to be around that train.
It's there in that complex on the side facing the train tracks. They have special glass windows,
right?
Not like probably that house to help bump.
But
the
you back. Still yeah. have the noise inside. You still have to pause the TV.
Yeah. So I'm just going to show you really quick, since we've done one of each and we'll do one more, but like how I would go through the list, like if all of these came in today, what I would do based on my own buying criteria. Right, I tend to pull them up, and I go, oh, you know, where is it located? Okay, it's in Old Town. I don't do a lot in Old Town, so I'm not really excited about it, and I know that means it's going to be a higher price, right? It's in Old Town. Everything in Old Town is higher priced. So I look at that and I go, hey, what's the rent? And it looks like the rent totals about $2,575, so we'll call that $2,600 on $465. I'm immediately turned off. That ratio sucks for me, right? So I'm like, yeah, unless there's something really amazing about it or I'm trying to buy properties in Old Town, right? This is an up-down duplex, which if you notice, this seems to be a kitchen island. I want to point out this is actually your dishwasher. And what's awesome is for the pictures, they unhooked it. There's no water running to it. You're not going to unscrew your water hose every time you don't use your dishwasher.
People do it all the time for the mobile ones.
That's insane.
Hey, as an aside, so you said your ratio of rent to price, it wasn't good for you. Where's your cutoff?
So there's not like a specific number, but I'm hoping it's closer to 0.7, 0.8, right? Because this is like point.
Below 0.7, it's a pass, or if it's below 0.7, but it's amazing, you're like willing to consider it. Where's your sort of like mental cutoff?
I don't have that's not in my criteria,
okay.
Right? But it's just a gut, like it's really low in this case. Like it's just too low, and it's an Old Town, right? And it's got a salmon bathroom, which they actually tout in here. Pink salmon bathroom makes this a great little place to call home, which is awesome. I now know how to market an apartment I have. Beautiful green bathroom from the 60s. You'll love it. And the other thing you'll notice as you look at the pictures, it's up and down, right? So one of them looks beautiful, and the other one, right, which is downstairs, is much different, right? Low ceilings, you know, not much light because the windows are, you know, barely garden level.
What did you see, the pipe? Where's the pipe?
What? That's just a dryer vent.
Oh, that's a
dryer. Yeah, don't bother about that dryer vent.
You can detach it when you're not using it.
Yeah. Yeah, so for me, so that one's trash for me. I toss it. I keep going. Next one's in Greeley. This is a really funky-looking building. I'm not sure what's going on. Legal triplex with fourth basement unit. Think about that. Legal three units. You can rent the fourth one, too, if you want.
I've seen this one.
Have you? Is this the same one that BY saw? You don't know?
I don't know about that.
A person who's not here tonight bought a house in Windsor. So this is just south of Business 34, close to the court. They're redoing that part of downtown in Greeley, but it's going to take them a while. They think rent is $1,300 plus $900 plus $600 plus not available because no one's renting that fourth basement unit because it's not legal. So what are we looking at? $2,800 on $325. Is that interesting? That's not bad, right? You're getting closer to 1%. Let's take a look inside. I don't particularly like the neighborhood in Greeley. Whoa. So, surprise. That looks pretty nice. You've been inside this? And?
The one unit looked really good.
The one we're looking at? And that's all you get to see. Ladies and gentlemen, please come see this beautiful property with three crappy units and one great unit. Is that about right?
Yep.
So, even at that, I mean, this could very easily make me call James and say, hey, let's go see that. If he hasn't already seen it, if I look at that and I go, man, that unit's done up and it's nice, let's go see it. What happens when we go see it? Tell me about the other two units.
They're been lived in for a while. They're pretty rough, a lot of deferred maintenance. And they're funky. It was a big house that was converted to units. So you know, one of the units, you had to go up almost like two flights of stairs and enter from the back. The other one he entered from the side, which I was not able to get into. And then I saw the basement unit, and the basement unit was pretty rough.
Yeah.
And no egress windows. So the basement unit is probably, you shouldn't have someone down there.
So it's illegal, like doubly illegal, not zoned for a fourth unit, and somebody
right.
could die down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the front unit, I mean, it was a little bit, the kind of layout was a little bit strange just because it was an old house that was kind of converted. But it was done nice, and it was in good condition.
Yeah. So I might evaluate that further.
Deferred maintenance on the outside, too.
Yeah.
It's hard to see from the photo.
I will tell you, I'm not a big fan of houses that are converted into multifamily. It just doesn't make sense to me personally. So I probably wouldn't dig in any further. We already looked at this next one. We're not fully protected. Everyone be worried. you know, what was the rent on this one, Joe? Do you remember? Oh, so it's only, there are three twos, a thousand, so 2,000 on 370, so that doesn't seem very good. So I would probably trash that one. I'm trashing the multifamily up there. Here's another example where you're like, seven units, 500,000? Yes! And then you're like, what is that? Like, maybe I should just make that my house or something. That looks awesome. Yeah, so it's this building. Let's read it, because original brick, four square, built for Loveland Christian Orphanage, remodeled in 65 with updates since 1977. Yeah.
I saw that one. I can ask, isn't there something funky with the historic landmark thing? You have to keep it preserved. You have to preserve it.
Is it already, does it say that somewhere?
Well, it says on the top line, it says eligible for historic.
You just skip right over it. You're reading.
Oh. So lots of buildings, I own a building in Loveland where they send me a postcard like every 6 months and they're like, hey, register your building as a historic landmark and you can do that. Or a historic downtown building, and you don't have to do it. Once you register, in most cases, if you try to make changes to the building, it becomes much more difficult.
Yeah.
So be aware if you do that, that you're asking for something. So this...
You don't necessarily have to sign up for it, though.
No.
If you own it, you don't...
Yeah.
What's the upside?
I don't know. I haven't done it. So I don't know what the upside is. Yeah, so this has six one-bedroom units and one two-bedroom unit. There's no rent listed in here, but they put $45,000 as potential rental income with, of course, no vacancy. For me, I look at this and go, it's one of those where it's like, it's a house converted, and this part looks really nice.
Yeah, it was an orphanage that was converted to a house.
Yeah, so a big house was converted into multifamily.
$45,000, is that
what you said? Yep.
It's not a multifamily, though, because it's bedrooms. Like, there's one apartment, I think, in this one, then you have bedrooms and a common area.
Yeah.
I think they're doing $500 for each bedroom and then six for maybe.
Yep. So here's the key. Additional six bedrooms share living area, kitchen, and two baths. So how are you going to rent that?
By the
bedroom, but now you've got some extra risk, right? I almost bought a property in Greeley that was a 9-bed, 3-kitchen, 3-bath property where kind of everything had access to each other. And it was like, hey, if you can get somebody on each floor, you could kind of lock them off. But when you start doing that, like, hey, and it was near UNC, which is where a lot of those houses are, right? If I'm putting three guys on the top floor and three girls in the middle floor and a mix of girls and guys on the bottom floor that don't know each other, right? I'm screening them. There's all sorts of crazy stuff that could be going on there, right? And I don't want that liability personally, so I don't tend to rent by the bedroom. So this is a weird one. So for me, this one just gets axed.
The numbers on the one you were looking at were crazy.
Were incredible.
Yeah. So what are the numbers on that one?
I just deleted it.
Oh.
Yeah. See, I don't... This is just it, right? I don't spend my time doing that. The numbers on the one I almost bought, the rent would have been like $3,300. Is that right? What's nine? Nine times... God, it was more than that.
Nine times six. It was like $600 a bedroom.
Yeah, so the one I was looking to buy in was $5,400 a month in rent, and the price I had it under contract for was $250,000, and it probably needed $100,000 of work. Easy. And I walked away, but it probably would have been amazing, right? So you never know.
But would it have kept you up at night?
Nah, it would have kept somebody up, but it wouldn't have been me. This property is not for rent. It's on Butternut Drive. How many of you guys know where Butternut Drive is? How many people have been shot there this year? Did anyone in here shoot anyone? Let's hope not. So, Butternut is notoriously a louder, noisier, more rough street in Loveland. There's a big curve where Butternut is. I've seen several properties on there. I do fancy these beautiful ceiling designs that are original.
And
the built-in closets are also pretty cool. So this looks like it's in decent shape.
Go back one. Is that a wood countertop in the bathroom?
Yeah. It's not really wood. It's like paneling.
It might actually be wood.
It's paneling. Yeah. So it looks like it's in decent shape. There's some nice tile.
Wow.
Some outside carpet. Some outside brick and carpet in your bathroom. Ugh. It's got a big yard. You could definitely fence that off. So what's it back to? Yep. It backs to the creek, which backs to the railroad tracks. You're definitely hearing the train still, right? So 350, this is 2,000 on 350,000, right? And it's in a rougher part of Loveland for me. I don't buy on butternut. So for me, trash can. What is this? Greeley, 1,200 for it. So this is almost the same location as the other one. It's 215,000, two units.
It's a duplex for 200, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's an awesome. It's a duplex for 200,000. Who wants to buy it? It's $1,200 of rent.
That's a low rent.
Wow, they divided it like right down the middle. They took a house and basically cut it in half is what it looks like. So these are very small. Let's see, where's square footage? 2464. So it is. It's unfinished basement.
600 of it?
So you got 600 square foot per unit finished. That's pretty tiny, which is why your rent is 650 and 600. So again, it's a house. For me, that's a pass.
Do you look at the potential of, okay, I'm going to finish the basement, put more?
Nope. Okay. Not when it's a house split up. Here's another one, Prime UNC. So let's actually see if it's Prime UNC. It actually is right next to UNC. So if you're going to buy student rentals around UNC, UNC is probably never going away. Right?
Just occasionally see people write Prime UNC on 34 on the way into Greeley.
Yeah. For sure. So this is probably, I'm guessing by looking at the house, because it looks like the one I almost bought, it's probably very similar, right? Main floor is going to be super nice, and the upstairs is going to be a little wonky. This ceiling was actually in the kitchen of the one I saw, and so if you were, the oven was here against the wall, and the angle was this way. So at my height, if you wanted to cook something, you were like this over the stove. You couldn't stand up straight. And I was like, it's going to be weird if you're cooking something and you're just constantly in the heat. So let's see. Oversized two-car garage. This one won't be on the market long, just in case you guys are interested. So here it is, right? There's one unit that's a five-bed and a two-bath. It rents for $23,700 a month. It's a deal. Welcome to realtors that don't know how to put their numbers in. So what is that? 20, somebody divide 24,000 by 12, what's that going to be? 2,000 a month. So they're basically saying, hey, there's a five-bed, two-bath for $2,000 a month, and then there's a two-bed, one-bath for like 900 or 850 a month or something. So I don't know what that is, 37... Yeah. So for me, this is one of those weird ones. I don't want a five bed. You could definitely put it under property management, have them rent it, and it might be an amazing thing. I don't tend to do student rentals. So for me, this is in the trash. Here's a great one. Photos unavailable, which always means good things. This is a great investment property. Excellent location, close to the college. Main property, cute bungalow style. Three bed, two bath, eat-in kitchen. Second house is a two bed, one bath. So it's two houses. For $232,000. What kind of condition do you think that is? Yeah. That's why there's no picture. 1375 and 1050. So 2425. We're at the 1% rule. Are you willing to go look? I think so, right? You immediately know. Like, I didn't have to plug all this stuff into the spreadsheet, right? So once you've analyzed a few hundred properties, you'll just kind of be able to go, hey, that might be worth going and seeing, but I'm assuming it's going to be junky, and I'm not going to want to buy it, but I'm going to go see it, right, just in case, right? And you may be able to go fix it up, make it a great rental, and, you know, put $50,000 into it where it's now $280,000 and you're all in and you're getting $2,400 a month. That's a great thing. So there's a place where you want to go see it to see what kind of shape it's in. right? Or wait till they post pictures, or have Tammy actually call over and say, hey, do you have pictures? Can you tell us anything?
Would you Zillow that address to see if
this, Sure, let's do it. Great point. Thank you for bringing that up. There are so many different things to do. We'll just do this. Which one are we wanting? 1905 6th Avenue. Am I going the right way? Why is the address not changing? Yeah, it's just not changing the address, which is odd. Let's see where it's at on the map. All right, so it says it's the second house in, we will just drop right there. So it looks like we're very close. So it's probably this with a house in the back or this with a house in the back. And if we can...
No, it's the second house. That's the first one. So
yeah. Yeah. Yep, I was just trying to zoom in on the address, but I'm as... Yep, so there's your two units, and then you can zoom out and look around the neighborhood. What are we across from? Like a ball field? So there's one that I probably would initially just look at the location and the price and go, I'm not going to buy it, and I might miss it, right? So that actually might be worth going and seeing. And I think that's it from our favorites list. What time is it? 8:43. Does that give you guys an idea of how to analyze properties and go find them and all the things that kind of go into that? Is there anything else you guys want to see? You want to go through one more and plug into the spreadsheet? Or is that a fairly decent idea of what to do? Perfect.
I understood the spreadsheet part. I'd like to pick your brain a little more on your like macro vision of what I want. I don't think that translated well to me.
Sure. So I shared my criteria in
Get Your First Deal Done
not too long ago, and it's in that slide deck. And it's literally written criteria, right? And so I'll try and do it from memory. You know, I put it in question form for myself. Is it in Fort Collins, Loveland, Windsor, Evans, Greeley, or maybe Longmont? And if it is, great, you pass that. And if it's not, is it something that I could get into and out of in 2 to 5 years and make a good deal of money, right? So I have a criteria around that. So if it's in, you know, Westminster, can I go down, buy it, and lease option it and be out in 2 years or 5 years or something like that? Because I don't want to hold long term down there. You know, is it a 3-bed or 4-bath? If it's a single family home, if it's multifamily, like I have, it's going to be tough for me to pull because there's like 15 criteria, and I don't have it on my drive.
Today, I got the feeling that you're looking for multi-unit. Apparently, you don't like anything east of I-25.
That's not true. It's just I don't do anything in Old Town, right? So I don't own anything north of Prospect, right? So for me, it's just a totally different market, right? Like renting up there. And you're buying, I think, for different reasons if you're buying in the Old Town area, at least. And I've been out, and I've seen stuff on Loma Linda, and it's just not interesting to me because it's just not a place I want to buy longer term.
What do you think about a past Fort Collins up there in the...
Wellington?
Yeah, I don't really know the
same. I don't own anything in Wellington. I'm sure James has clients that own stuff in Wellington, and he could probably talk to Wellington better than I could. The mayor of Wellington's not here. I don't know where Mitch is, but, you know, Wellington... I think the question for me with Wellington and why I haven't bought there is, you know, people are like, well, Fort Collins is expanding and it's eventually going to just kind of take Wellington into account. And I'm just not convinced that's going to happen in my lifetime. So for me, I'd rather buy in places that I'm really super familiar with instead of going to Wellington. I'd rather buy, you know, in Greeley or Evans or somewhere like that. So back to your...
No, understood. Like, looks like you don't like the downtown Fort Collins because you think of people buy there to live.
I think if you're buying in downtown Fort Collins and you're planning on, hey, I'm using this as a wealth-building vehicle, and you believe that you're betting on appreciation, which is something I don't like to do, right? To me, that's speculation. You can do that in California if you want to, right? buy when the property values go down, and then stick everything you have in there and wait 10 years, and hopefully it goes up and you've got, you know, two or three times your money. But to me, I'd rather see regular cash flow coming out of the property for what I want. So this is why you guys all need your own criteria. I would rather own newer, but, you know, multifamily stuff that comes on the market is typically, you know, I don't typically buy in the 30s, 1930s, 1940s, and older than that, but, you know, 1960s, 1970s, I definitely buy that.
What do you think about that period where they were putting aluminum wiring in?
I don't like aluminum wiring. Just, yeah.
You don't avoid it.
I don't own anything with aluminum in it. Oh, okay. Yeah, so I guess I kind of do avoid it.
How do you know?
You have an inspection and you ask. It's on the seller's property disclosure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's aluminum wiring, right? There's aluminum wiring. There's asbestos. There's lead-based paint. There's all sorts of things like that to worry about with age of property. There's knob and tube wiring before that, and I've dealt with knob and tube where it's active and I had to pull it out. So it really just depends. You know, knob and tube, you can pull it out and replace it, I think, easier than replacing aluminum, which is typically all behind the walls. The knob and tube, typically the houses are old enough and it's all up in the attic and it just goes straight up the walls, and it's much easier replacement job. So, I'm going to go back to the presentation and then we can answer all the questions because I got a couple more slides, and if I'm not done by 8, James will be all over me or something. So here's some thoughts. You know, make sure you've got your goals on analyzing properties, right? And they're different for everybody, as you've seen tonight, right? People are going to buy Loma Linda. Some people are going to buy the condo. It's like split 50-50 in this room, just on two properties, right? And if I asked you, hey, you don't have to raise your hand, you know, how many of you would have bought neither? I'm sure some of those people would have put their hands up. How many would have bought both? Somebody would have put their hand up. So everybody has different stuff. Figure out what your minimum cash-on-cash return is, right? This is an important thing. If it's, hey, for me, it's got to be at least 3% if it's in Fort Collins, right? That's one of my criteria. Is it break-even managed in Fort Collins, or is it at least 5% managed in Greeley, right? Have criterias for different cities. Don't just say, oh, I need 5% managed everywhere, right? Think about where you're buying and what the benefits and the negatives are of that. I obviously put a lot of weight on cash on cash. And then think about our market conditions, right? Market's constantly changing, but in this market, things are different than they were 5 years ago. So if you're trying to buy and your criteria are left over from 5 years ago, it's going to be really hard to buy in this market. I want to buy a $225,000 three-bedroom, two-bath in, you know, Fort Collins. That's good. You know, it's not going to happen.
So let's talk about that for a moment. So if your criteria 5 years ago was I need 5% cash-on-cash return in order to be able to buy, and the market has since shifted, and there's no way you're getting 5% cash-on-cash in the current market, you're lucky if you're break-even now. But you have money that you have to put to work somewhere. Are you still buying, or are you holding firm to your 5%?
I think you modify based on what you need, right? So this is why you have your whole plan of, hey, where do you want to be? Are you trying to get to $2,000 a month, $5,000 a month, $10,000 a month? And if the money you're placing isn't helping you get closer to that goal, you probably have to look somewhere else to do your buying, right? And so this happened, right? This is what drove me to buy in Greeley the first time. And in fact, I think I bought in Evans before I bought in Greeley, right? I looked at Fort Collins and I'm like, man, you know, where can I get a better cash on cash return? And a property came on the market and I was analyzing all the stuff that was coming on, and stuff came on in Evans and it was like, holy cow, like I'm managing the stuff over here and I'm getting 5%. Here I can have it managed and it's going to be like 10%. And I was like, James, let's go, right? And it's a very different market, especially where I bought, but it worked out really well. So I think you have to alter your goals, just like your annual goals, right? You start your year, you're thinking you're going down this path and something changes. You need to modify and be able to adapt to the current market. When the market, if it starts to correct, right? Same thing. Oh, hey, the market's correcting. I'm seeing 3% in Fort Collins. Fantastic. Don't buy the 0%. And it may depend on your personal situation as to whether you're trying to just buy properties for wealth building that are at least break even. Right? If you go to Wake Up Money with Larry Kendall, that's what he's teaching. Right? He's teaching buy a property that's at least break even and pay it off and continue to buy. Right? So it really depends on what your goals are. There's no one easy answer, and I'm in a different space now than I was, you know, when I was buying a lot more 5 years ago. So for me, my buying criteria have even tightened up from then. Set your personal minimum and stick to it. Don't look at a property like Loma Linda and be like, yeah, it was 4.19. I said I needed 6%. You know, maybe insurance will be a little less, and maybe I'll get a better interest rate. So I adjust the numbers, and I make it work. Don't do that. You're setting yourself up for failure. Keep looking. Keep at it. I know it's hard, but that's where you're going to make your money, is buying it right.
Hey, can I make one comment on what you just said there?
Yeah.
So sometimes people come in initially with very unrealistic expectations, and then adjusting down is completely legit.
Yes.
But if you're...
If you're adjusting based on a property, it's not the right thing to do. If you're adjusting based on, hey, my criteria suck, right? I got to change them so that they actually allow me to buy something that's going to be profitable. But don't adjust your criteria so much even on that that it makes it, hey, I'm just buying stuff to buy stuff. Don't be a collector, right? We're not here to collect houses. We're here to buy great deals. You're here to collect houses, huh? I like it. So what else do we need to be concerned about? What does the ROI look like in 5, 10, or 15, or 30 years? Right? Looking at that. For me, I want to see that number. I just had this discussion today. In year 10, right, in the spreadsheet, I think we still have the condo in here, right? Yep. So if you come down here to the bottom, whoosh, right? Here's year 10, right? The condo, annualized ROI 26.86. Year 15, it gets to 30. That's not terrible. That basically is saying that if you invested whatever amount of money you needed to invest at the beginning and you hold it for 15 years, you will have gotten a 30% return every year on your money. Every year. This is why real estate is amazing, because you can get that kind of return. So I like to see this number. Previously, they're getting lower given market conditions. Prices are going up. I used to always like to see the number in year 10 be 30, somewhere between 30 and 40%, right, in the 30s. Right now, you can tell things are being driven down. It's taking a little longer to get there, but it still gets there. If you hold this for, you know, 30 years or 35 years, you basically put in, I don't know how much we put in on this deal, 47,000, right? And you basically got a 50-whatever percent return on that every single year for 35 years. Go do the math. It works out. It's crazy. That's why real estate's awesome. And does that meet your expectations, which I just talked about what mine were. Run conservative. So you saw me kind of start with conservative for insurance and interest rate, and then go run your best case. Hey, if I get that $1,795 for this condo, man, it looks awesome. And then what do you think is the middle of the road? Right? And that's the one you're trying to do your best estimate and your best guesses on. If the conservative one doesn't meet your expectations, pass. Move on. Right? And how bad is worst case? If you run your worst case scenario and you're like, man, I'm going to owe $600 a month on this property, there's no way I'm going to be able to keep it afloat, don't buy it. If it's, hey, worst case scenario that I can think of, it's negative $50 a month, can you support that? Probably. So you can probably know, hey, I'm going to be able to get through any bad situation within reason, right? Borrowing, you know, horrible events that, you know, are tragic in the world that are unforeseeable. How sensitive are your numbers? Sometimes $1,695 to $1,595 in rent makes a huge difference. Sometimes it doesn't, right? There's a threshold where your rent gets high enough and all your stuff is basically paid for, and then everything you can add on top of that is just gravy straight to the bottom line. So be aware of how sensitive your numbers are on purchase price and down payment. Rent, biggest unknown factor, right? We saw it in the intros. You know, what if I think it's $1,600, but I only get $1,400, right? Hopefully, you can now go out to Craigslist and you can use James or Tammy and have them run rent comps, and they will be able to provide you that information. You can see and get more comfortable with it. You can go look at properties to make sure that you've seen a lot of properties in person so you understand, hey, yeah, this does feel like that property that I saw that I know rented for $1,695. Like, that's a big mental thing that you can't learn from just sitting in front of your computer. But don't let this paralyze you, right? Don't, $1,500 or $1,600. If it's $1,500, I can't buy it. If it's $1,600, don't be paralyzed, right? use the data, and then take action. One of the other things, right, estimations, unforeseen stuff, CapEx, right? People think, I don't know how to estimate windows. How much does a window cost, right? How much does a door cost? What does flooring cost? What does paint cost? It seems overwhelming, but it's not really that hard, right? Flooring. How much does flooring cost a square foot?
For carpet, probably $3 to $4 square foot.
Yeah, how much is paint per square foot?
Probably $1.50 per square foot. Yeah,
$1.50 to $2, right? So how many square foot do you have? There you go. Now you've got a number. How much is a window?
$400, $500.
Yeah, $400, $500, multiply by the number of windows you need replaced, right? They're a really easy kind of rule of thumbs, and if you don't know, just call somebody up and say, hey, I've got 10 windows in a house. How much is that going to cost to replace? Here's the biggest, here's the smallest. Rob?
Did those numbers include labor, or was it just like the window pane?
No, $500 is installed.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would have said $300 to $400, depending on what kind of windows you're buying, but $500 is probably upper end, so not like wood windows or anything, but... So do those phone calls, right? And do them a couple times, and you'll very quickly understand how much do things cost. And then you'll be able to cross this up, right? Hopefully we've crossed off how much is rent. Estimations. CapEx, same thing. How much does a furnace cost? 1,200 square foot house, probably about $2,000 to $3,000 installed, right? They're very just basic numbers. And if you're not sure and you haven't gotten one in a while, call two people up and ask them, hey, you know, ballpark, what is this? Get your estimate. You're never going to be exact, so don't worry about being exact. That's not what's going to matter. Research your area, run the rental cops, call the cops. Funny story, I actually had the cops show up on me for breaking into one of my own properties once. I didn't know the tenant had, it was a house I had just bought, the tenant had an alarm system on it, and he knew I was coming, and so I got there and he wasn't there and I had the key. So I was just like, I rang the doorbell a bunch, knocked on the door, and the guy to do the repairs for the garage was there, and I just wanted to let him in, right? And so I like stick the key in the lock, I turn it, and I open the door, and I hear, doot! And I was like, oh man, I have 30 seconds to enter a code that I don't know, right? 30 seconds later, the alarm goes off, and I'm like, okay, shut the door, wait like 5 minutes, the alarm goes off. We found that the back side of the garage is actually unlocked, so I let the guy in. And so he's doing the repair, and along comes the cop, no lights on, just cruising. He pulls up. He's like, hey, are you breaking into the house? I'm like, nope. He was super nice, but it was pretty funny. He stood there, talked to me, took my name. I'm like, I own the house, right, blah, blah, blah. But it's pretty funny. So, you know, in our market, does the 1% rule make sense? Does it? I mean, from what you say I saw tonight, are you finding 1% properties? How about 2%? That's like double, right?
So we have a 1% rule in our market. 1% of the properties have break-even cash flow.
Yeah, nice. And 2% of the realtors know how to enter their numbers correctly into the MLS. Isn't he does? Tammy does. 50% rule. Who knows what that is? So what about the other 49? So 50% rule, right? Typically, you just set aside 50% of your income, and that's going to cover kind of all of the expenses on the property, right? In our market, especially at higher-priced homes, hopefully this is less. I would say 35 to 43% for our market. But these are rules you're going to see people talking about on BiggerPockets and other sources online. And they're like living by them like they're the golden rule. There's nothing else that they can follow. Don't fall into that trap, right? There's a bunch of, they're finally, 5 years ago on BiggerPockets, it was like that was just, everybody talked about it. Now people are like, that rule sucks. And I'm like, finally, people are like turning the corner. Look at your actual maintenance and CapEx dollars. Don't just say, oh, it's just going to blindly be this or the previous landlord said it's going to be this. Go do some research and think about what you're going to need. You know, is it enough to replace your flooring and paint, you know, every few years? Or what about a water heater and a furnace and all the other stuff you're going to need? All right, last slide. Like I said, make sure you've got your criteria written down. Really, really go do this. If you don't have it written down, please go do it. If you're James's client, you can go back and watch the buying, what is it called? Get Your First Deal Done. It was the like restart where I teach like everything end to end, and like every bullet is its own class that we then teach later in the year. My criteria are in there, so if you want to start with that as a framework, it may not fit for you at all, but adjust as needed, like we talked about. Don't react to like, oh, I really want to buy this property, so I'm going to adjust my criteria to make it fit. Don't do that. Adjust your criteria, then analyze the deals. How do we get better at analyzing properties? Do it, right? Do it all the time. You have to go analyze a lot of properties, right? If you just analyzed, you know, how many single-family homes come on the market every day, James? Average. Five?
No.
Two? Ten?
So there's about 4,000 a year in Fort Collins, so about 10 a day.
Perfect. And so maybe three of those fall inside your criteria price range every day if you just use price range and location, right? So if you analyze three properties every day, and James can send you all the current ones that are listed, so you'll get a head start of like a couple hundred, right? If you went and analyzed all those, how far ahead would you be of where you are now? How many properties would you have thought about? How many pictures would you have looked at? How many times would you have thought, what is this rent for, and looked at rent comps? Your knowledge base will expand incredibly quickly. And that's super important. I can't stress that enough. And then when you find the ones that you think are awesome, go look at them, right? Go walk them so that you know, hey, this is what I saw on paper. And sometimes you're going to be like, man, it looked like a pile of crap on, you know, the pictures, and I got there and it was amazing. And other times it'll be just the opposite. There'll be the pictures of Unit B and it will not look anything like that. That was from 10 years ago, right? So this is helping you accumulate a knowledge base. And this is what's important in investing and being able to analyze deals and act quickly. If you can walk through a house and go, yeah, you know, this looks like the seven other houses that we've seen just like this, and we know those were renting for $1,695 to $1,795, and the purchase price is $325, I'm good with that. Let's move, right? I can go plug all the numbers in the spreadsheet, but I already know because I've analyzed so many deals what it's going to look like. I'm going to look for exceptions. I'm not going to not do it if I'm going to buy it. But definitely build that knowledge base for yourself in any market you're buying in. And then, of course, go buy all those great deals that you find. And that's all I have. So
I'll add one more thing to that, and that is if you made an offer on a property and the numbers worked for you, if you just memorize those numbers, a lot of times we can adjust from those numbers to see how far off it is from there.
Yep.
Once you know, once you've said, okay, I'm really comfortable with this number, it would have been a good deal, you can adjust.
Yeah. Any questions? Picking the brain, whatever you guys want. We're here to tell you. Yeah,
no,
Gretchen.
Question. I just would like to see that your very first screen about the classes that will be happening and when they will be. In.
It's all on the website, so ncraig.com and learntoberich.com.
Okay.
Yep. The schedules are always there. Meetup, right? ncraig.com will take you to Meetup. Joey. LearnToBeRich.com/spreadsheet.
Yeah, and I download it while you can because it's going to change very soon.
Yeah, and I'll give James the new version tonight to upload. And so the version that I just created is version 3.8, if you care. The old, there's not a lot different, just James can't complain about quirks.
/spreadsheet.
Yep. Curtis.
How do you go about verifying HOA?
I usually believe what's in there. And then if I'm going to put an offer, right, I'm going to verify that it's that. Or you can call the HOA, right, and just say, hey, I'm looking at buying this house. How much is your monthly HOA? You know, or you can have, you know, James is your realtor. I'm sure he or Tammy would be happy to call the HOA for you and find out.
We don't usually do that until after you're under contract. We just assume it's correct. And
yeah.
If we find out it's not, we usually find out pretty early. And you can terminate if you have an inspection. If you do not have an inspection, well, I guess
there's
HOA doc review, too, so you'll have an opportunity to review at that point.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you found out, hey, I thought it was 205 and really it's 260, you know, maybe you object to the HOA docs and you say, you know, for me to resolve this, I need you to pay, you know, 3 years of that extra $55 a month, right? That'd be one way to do it, and then you're still getting the same deal that you thought you were.
Yeah.
Anybody else have questions, comments, thoughts? Yeah.
We heard your comment earlier about Zillow.
Rent numbers.
Yeah, so they're like rent Zestimate or whatever, I forget what they call it, but it's the same thing, right? Like, they're they're not, someone's not sitting down and going and looking. They're just calculating a number based on attributes of properties that are close by, which is, you know, it's one data point. Is it going to be right or wrong? I would trust it about as much as I trust their, you know, Zestimate of house price, which isn't very reliable, right?
So I'll describe how they, and you can go right on Zillow, and they will tell you how accurate they are. But their accuracy, it reads something like this. Half of the time, we are within 15% of the sale price, which if you think about that, what that means is on a $300,000 property, half the time they are within $255,000 to $345,000 of the price. The other half of the time, they're worse than that.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not a very accurate measure at all. It could be high, it could be low, and so it's not super accurate.
Yeah. I would much prefer looking at Craigslist or calling a property manager or asking James, or there's a number of other things before I would ever put any weight on Zillow's rent estimate.
So just a comment on Zillow, though, I do like about it is I can go in and quickly see things like tax history, and I found those to be accurate. But the other thing that's kind of cool is if it's been a rental before, sometimes they'll have residual photos when the landlord had it listed, so you can see other photos of the property that may not be in the
Yeah, so I'm not saying it's not useful. I'm just saying that if you're using that as your only source of rent or price data, it's probably far off. LaShawna?
Another comment just on the rent on Zillow is usually they're from like, they're usually $400 gaps or something large and significant like that. So if you're trying to put it in the spreadsheet that says it's from $1,400 to $1,800, that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
What do you do, pick the middle?
No. Yeah, they're giving you your low end and your high end. They're making it easy.
So you cannot rely on those numbers.
Yeah, and really it's 1,300, so you know that's the actual rent.
The other rather unusual thing about rents is the person renting the property has a huge impact on what they can get.
Yes.
And Brian and I were joking about this on the phone the other day because you know he has this tendency to be able to just get top of the market rent when he's renting out properties, and some other landlords are not able to do that. Either you do not have the salesmanship, or you're not screening on the phone right, or you're not asking for the right amount to begin with. And so there's a natural range of rents for properties, period. Yeah. So there is not an exact number for that rent number, no matter what.
Yeah.
So.
Yep, for sure. And that's, I mean, it's something you give up. If you're great at doing that, when you give it to a property manager, you're giving some of that up, right? There's pluses and minuses to
everything.
So
sometimes
everything.
It's not just the cost of the property manager. It's the cost of the property manager. And
minus the rent.
They're not you able to get...
Yeah.
99th percentile of rent,
right.
They're getting the 85th percentile of rent, or whatever it is.
Yep. Yeah. Other thoughts, questions?
I have a thought, you know, for whomever is just starting this.
Yeah.
I really wish I had a Brian and a James 30 years ago when I first bought my property.
I appreciate that.
Thanks.
I had every day that I come here, every time that I come here, it's like, oh, I didn't do this. I learned all the wrong things that I've done. You guys are really lucky to have these two guys here.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's why, I mean, it's in the One Thing book review, right? Like, learn from other people's mistakes, right? And take that knowledge and don't make that same mistake. Make a different one and then tell somebody the mistake you made so they don't have to make it, right? Because, I mean, I've shown you the mistakes I've made in financing properties and putting too much money down up front and not using my loan spots in the way that I could have used them had I only taught, you know, my financing class to myself 5 years earlier, right? It would have been, oh, hey, you know, good information. Time travel, yeah. If time travel, we'd all be rich, right? Which would mean then if we could time travel, we'd probably all be dead. Yeah, so, yep, awesome. Well, thanks for coming. Stick around for the class after the class.